You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. In this podcast, we're bringing you another highlight from One Crown Office Row's 2018 seminar, Truth, Justice and Accountability, the Modern Challenges of Major Inquests and Inquiries. One Crown Office Row's Gideon Bart talked specifically on the topic of when public inquiries are established or inquests are reopened.
You might think that the processes by which public inquiries and inquests are either started or reopened are both practically, legally and jurisprudentially separate. They're different investigations conducted and overseen by separate authorities and which serve possibly different functions and purposes. But I hope in looking at them together, there are some interesting parallels that we can draw and learn from them. First of all, public inquiries. Major and extraordinary events such as disasters or multiple deaths, which shock the public, often lead to the swift announcement of a public inquiry. This is in part because the response of politicians, because they want to be seen to be proactively responding to a disaster. But more importantly, it's the framework through which the state responds to a disaster, with a view to establishing the facts, ensuring accountability, learning lessons, restoring public confidence, and trying some form of reconciliation and resolution. But there appears to me, at least, a real lack of consistency or clarity as to when a public inquiry will or should be ordered. Why is it that some events trigger large public inquiries lasting many years and at great expense, whereas other disasters or scandals, totally unconsidered, or considered with just a private review and report? I'm going to go through a couple of examples of when public inquiries were and weren't granted, and then see how they link to inquests. So first of all, the Inquiries Act 2005, that's the act that brings together all of the various pieces of legislation to provide a statutory framework for public inquiries. And it says, section 1.1, the power to establish an inquiry. A minister may cause an inquiry to be held under this act in relation to a case where it appears to him that A, particular events have caused or are capable of causing public concern, or B, there is public concern that particular events may have occurred. So all the guidance is public concern, sufficiently woolly that no one really knows what it means, but also probably sufficiently woolly so it allows deference to those who are able to measure what might be public concern, and those people are arguably politicians. But it's also the reason that this is seen as basically the framework by which they're used as political tools. Certainly, political parties seize on issues and claim that if they get in to government after the next election, they will launch a major inquiry into certain events. So some events so graphic, so widespread, so awful that an inquiry is perhaps inevitable. Two examples are Grenfell and the child sexual abuse scandal. But on other things, they aren't. Quite a lot of work was done by the House of Lords Select Committee scrutinising the Inquiries Act 2005 to try and find out what really was underpinning the granting of inquiries. They found some guidance from the Cabinet Office in 2010 which said an inquiry may be set up for one or more reasons. These include to establish the cause of a major disaster, accident or other event involving significant damage or loss of life, to make recommendations as how to learn lessons from such an event, to investigate serious allegations of general public concern which require thorough and impartial investigation and for which ordinary civil or criminal processes may not be adequate or appropriate. To me, that says they have no idea either quite what will be leading to the granting of a public inquiry. There are also factors that go against, most notably cost. Lord Foulkes gave evidence to that select committee when he was the Minister of State for Justice and said this: ministers will, however, also want to consider whether another vehicle would be more appropriate and effective, bearing in mind time and cost. This could be a non-statutory inquiry, an independent review, a parliamentary inquiry, an inquiry of privy councillors, and so on and so forth. It's difficult to get behind exactly then what politicians think are the reasons for granting inquiries. And so what the House of Lords Select Committee did, and they did research which is incredibly useful, is looked at all of the inquiries that went before and tried to pull out the themes that linked them. What they found was this. There were 5 inquiries which involved multiple deaths. 1 inquiry was set up in relation to health and safety concerns. 10 inquiries involved a previous investigation report and or regulatory or investigatory body involvement. And 2 inquiries were established in the context of international law or relations. And it's the third of those that's the most interesting. The third where the majority of inquiries were found were those that implicated the state's failure in some way or another. So, for example, the Mid-Staffs inquiry was a failure by the Healthcare Commission, the CQC, the Health and Safety Executive, and the Trust itself. Similarly, the Shipman inquiry. It wasn't just the fact that Shipman killed or could have killed all these people. It was actually there was mass murder, but also how the GMC, the coronial system, and the system of death certification all failed to spot it. I think what we can draw from these is that deaths from terrorist attacks, say, which almost always have potentially large-scale numbers and create what we might immediately interpret as public concern, might not lead to a public inquiry. For example, the 7/7 bombings, there was an inquest, and the Tunisia attacks had an inquest. But there's an implicit, or possibly there's a public concern that there exists, a failure by a state agency in not spotting Shipman, in not picking up the failures at Mid-Staffs, or in allowing the circumstances which led to the Grenfell, which lead to the granting of a public inquiry. So what are the reasons not to have a public inquiry? Inquiries are useful tools, but they're hugely expensive and time-consuming. They can be used to gain political plaudits, but when you're in government, the overwhelming reaction seems to be from ministers to say no to a public inquiry rather than yes. So, for example, deep-cut barracks, and I won't insult your intelligence by going through the details of every single one of these. Deep-cut barracks involved the deaths of 4 soldiers between 1995 and 2002 in Surrey. There were allegations of poor supervision, bullying, and so on. And there was a feeling among the families that there was some other fault at play. In effect, what the minister said was, the matter has been subject to thorough and detailed examination by Surrey Police, and so no inquiry was necessary. Shortly after that statement was made, a further report was commissioned by Nicholas Blake QC. So the fact that a previous detailed examination has taken place, probably a weak reason for not having a further examination. Mid-Staffs, that there was initially a refusal to have an inquiry. Again, and I quote, given the thoroughness of the reports already produced. But then, as we know, a campaign carried out and there was, in fact, a public inquiry. So again, poor excuse. The death of Pat Finucane has a complicated history. He was a human rights lawyer in Ireland. He was murdered by a group of loyalist paramilitaries. And there were allegations of collusion between the loyalist paramilitaries and the British state, the British army. Those accusations were in effect supported by various reports which took place over the years. And the government then commissioned a further report by Sir Desmond de Silva QC. And I think this is an important thing to note. The Secretary of State for Northern Ireland said when he launched that report, despite the clear conclusions of previous investigations and reports, there is still only limited information in the public domain. That is why my right honourable friend the Prime Minister and I have committed to establishing a process to ensure that the truth is revealed. That's fundamentally important. Even if there have been previous investigations, and even if it seems like all of the information might have been revealed, if that information isn't in the public eye, and it hasn't been examined in public, there will continue to be calls for an inquiry. In the Finucane case, while that report did come out, there was then calls yet again for an inquiry. And interestingly, David Cameron, who was then Prime Minister, said, if we look at other inquiries, and I quote, we see that some of them took 5 or 6 years or longer and cost tens of millions of pounds. And I do not believe that they got closer to the truth than De Silva has in his excellent and full report. So quite the opposite of what the government was saying very shortly before the report was produced. That decision has been judicially reviewed and dismissed by the Court of Appeal. But in July of last year, the Supreme Court granted permission to appeal. So we wait and see what might happen there. Similarly, the Battle of Orgreave, so-called. Again, I won't go through the details of it, but it's worth just citing what Amber Rudd said as the reasons for not granting an inquiry. That was, there were no deaths or wrongful convictions. Most importantly, the length of time and the changes in the criminal justice system mean there would be very few lessons to be learned from events that took place 3 decades ago. But again, probably not the last we've heard of that, and it's been booted back into the political realm, as the Labour Party have promised they will launch a public inquiry if they enter government. So turning very, very briefly, because I don't have much time, to inquests, and you'll see, I think, where we draw these two topics together. I'm not going to take you through why an inquest is granted in the first place. What's interesting is when inquests are reopened, and in particular these major inquests, in particular Hillsborough. Inquests can be quashed and resumed for a number of reasons. It's worth noting what Lord Bingham said in Armeen. The purposes of such an investigation are clear: to ensure so far as possible that the full facts are brought to light, that culpable and discreditable conduct is exposed and brought to public notice, that suspicion of deliberate wrongdoing, if unjustified, is allayed, that dangerous practices and procedures are rectified, and those who've lost their relative may at least have the satisfaction of knowing that lessons learned from his death may save the lives of others. And those summary of reasons and purposes that an inquest can play are incredibly similar to the sorts of reasons that the government gave for why certain public inquiries are granted. I'm going to skip through judicial review because there's not enough time for that and turn just to the Attorney General's Fee Act. That's when inquests are reopened on the basis that a coroner has refused or neglected to conduct an inquest, or where an inquest has been held, whether it's necessary or desirable in the interest of justice that a fresh inquest is held. Now, necessary or desirable, while in the interest of justice, while they seem to be similar to public concern per the Inquiries Act, are in fact, I think, legal issues. For example, the possibility of a different verdict, the fact of an individual dying in prison, and the length of time since an inquest is important. But when it comes to large-scale disasters and losses of life, there's another interesting public interest factor, very similar to that of public concern. This is the Lord Chief Justice in the Hillsborough case, and he said, "Without minimising the importance of a proper inquest into every death, where a national disaster of the magnitude of the catastrophe which occurred at Hillsborough on 15th of April 1989 has occurred, quite apart from the pressing entitlement of the families of the victims of the disaster to the public revelation of the facts, there is a distinct and separate imperative that the community as a whole should be satisfied that, even if belatedly, the truth should emerge." So just to draw together a few strands from all that sprint through two quite huge topics. The first thing is that previous investigations may not undercut calls for a public inquiry. Calls for public inquiries and inquests often emerge because of a sense of an injustice, a cover-up, because earlier investigations didn't involve families of the victims. In particular, concerns regarding a cover-up will unlikely be allayed unless there is a hearing in public. The example of the Augury campaign is instructive. There's no judicial review of the Secretary of State's decision yet, but neither has there been general acceptance of it. As I said, the issue is now in the political rather than the legal realm, but not necessarily concluded. The second, the failure by a regulatory or investigatory body will often lead to an inquiry, predominantly because of the lessons to be learned. The event that happened itself might be the trigger for the inquiry, but the response of governmental bodies or regulatory bodies is the real issue of public concern. Thirdly, cost is probably a relevant factor, but not determinative. Fourthly, PII issues can often lead to a public inquiry. But it's worth noting that in Finucane and in the Deep Cut Barracks cases, there has been a reluctance to order a public inquiry, and it might be that that's because the issues touch on issues of national security. Finally, public inquiries and resumed inquests have been used in the past to deal with public dissatisfaction at investigations and regulatory procedures which have preceded them. The inquiry into the contaminated blood scandal is one such example. But perhaps the swift launching of the Grenfell Tower inquiry shows a developing understanding that, however thorough, extensive and critical an investigation may be, the public concern or interest will only be satisfied or allayed by a fully public investigation, whether that's in the form of an inquest or the form of a public inquiry. Thank you.